Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for May 27th, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and I'll be talking to Gideon Schreiber about a variant of a type 1 interferon that elicits antiviral responses without suppressing cell proliferation. Interferons are cytokines, small secreted signaling molecules that mediate responses to pathogens and tumors. They're a major component of the innate immune response, which is the rapid response system that's common to all vertebrates. Interferons also serve as a link between the innate and adaptive immune responses. The type 1 interferons all bind to the same receptor, and they initiate the expression of genes that affect various cellular processes, including distinct sets of genes that limit the spread of viruses between cells, suppress cell proliferation, and modulate the immune response. A new study from Gideon Schreiber's lab has identified a variant of interferon alpha that elicits antiviral responses without suppressing cell proliferation or activating immunomodulatory genes. And this could be useful for treating viral infections. Schreiber spoke to me from the Weizmann Institute in Rehovot, Israel. Dr. Schreiber, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Type 1 interferons elicit several distinct responses in target cells. How do they signal?
Well, all type 1 interferons bind a common receptor on the cell surface. This receptor is known as type 1 interferon receptor, and it's somewhat different from other types of interferon receptors like type 2 and type 3. The type 1 interferon receptor is composed of two subunits, which are called interferon receptor 1 and interferon receptor 2. And intracellularly, they're associated with kinases, JAK and TYK. These kinases, they result in tyrosine phosphorylation of STATs. More specifically, the most common way is the phosphorylation of two STATs, STATs 1 and STAT 2. Now, this leads to dimerization of them and recruitment of another protein, and all these together will go then into the nucleus, and inside the nucleus, they form a transcription factor. Now, this transcription factor binds to the DNA and stimulates the production of over 1,000 different genes.
Among the responses that are affected by those different genes are the antiviral response and the antiproliferative response. And the potency of the antiviral and the antiproliferative and other responses to interferons varies between different type 1 interferons. But as you said, the type 1 interferons bind to the same receptor. So how does that variation in the response to different interferons arise?
Well, we actually have investigated this very thoroughly, and we started this biophysical work by producing a large number of mutations that will affect the binding affinity to either one of the two receptors. We also worked on the receptor complex, and together with the Garcia group in Stanford, we have solved the structure of the ternary complex and of the different components of this complex in order really to investigate how do we get differential activity. And our main conclusion is that what is really important is the ligand binding affinity to the receptor, to the either of the two receptors, the concentration of the ligand that we have, the concentration of the receptors on the surface, as well as the time of activation. It seems that the structure of the receptor complex is the same independent of which interferon is used and on the concentration that is used. So it's really a matter of dialing, and I would say the number. How much protein, how much ligand interferon you have there, how tight does it bind, and for how long will you edit and activate the system.
In this study, you looked at how a particular variant of interferon alpha affects the antiviral and antiproliferative responses. Is that variant that you looked at a naturally occurring form of interferon alpha?
No, what we did here, we produced an engineered interferon variant. And as I said before, in order to investigate the different interferon actions, we made a whole series of variants, and this is one of those variants. And in this case, this variant is binding much tighter to one of the receptors, the IFNAR2 receptor, but it's not binding the IFNAR1 receptor, or more precisely, it's binding extremely weak below our detection limit. apparently it does bind it, but we cannot really detect it anymore. The binding is so weak. Natural interferons have a whole range of binding affinities. So the tightest binding type 1 interferon is interferon beta, which really binds relatively tight to both of the receptor subunits, with the weakest binding interferon being interferon alpha 1 that binds the receptors relatively weakly. So we have also this natural variation in nature of tighter and weaker binding interferons. What we did here, we took a template of interferon alpha 2 and made by ourselves the tight and the weak binding interferon until the extreme, and the extreme is really the variant that we talk about here.
So that variant binds very tightly to one subunit of the receptor, but very weakly to the other subunit of the receptor, and so that prevents the ternary complex from being as effective as if the ligand were to bind both receptor subunits well.
This is exactly true. Still, what we found out that despite this, we still get a very weak signal. So it seems that this extremely weak binding to a second receptor is sufficient to produce a very weak signal.
And so how does that ligand affect the anti-proliferative and the antiviral responses of cells?
From what we found out, also from investigation of the natural interference, and this one is really kind of bringing it to the spotlight, is that when you have a very weak signal, you can activate only one set of genes, which is the one that is directly going through the start activation. So I talked about before that the standard interferon response goes through the activation of starts that goes into the nuclei. This kind of very weak binding ligand still can phosphorylate the starts, but very weakly. It's similar to having one picomolar of interferon. And also one could say this is actually enough when one does the numbers to activate one, two, or three surface receptors. That's it. So if one has hundreds of surface receptors, only 1% or maybe less of them can be activated at the same time. This is sufficient to provide a very weak signal. Now, the antiviral response is very robust. So it's sufficient that you have extremely low concentration of interferon, very low concentration of activated stuff, and you still get the induction of antiviral genes. We call those genes the robust genes because they will be activated in all the different cell lines, and they will be activated by very little interferon. So if the virus now will try to hinder the system from working, then you still will have sufficient signal to induce antiviral response. On the other hand, we have another response, the antiproliferative response. We have immunomodulatory responses of interferon, and interferon is very variable in what it can do. These kinds of responses, they actually need a much stronger signal for a prolonged time. So they need a large number of receptors to be activated and for a longer time. This is not possible with our variant because our variant will actually block the possibility to activate many receptors at all. So even if you take our variant and add to it natural interferon, you still cannot activate many receptors. So you will not get any antiproliferative response or activation of the immunomodulatory responses. So you will really be concentrated only one response, which is kind of a weak antiviral response, but all the other responses will be blocked completely. So it's a partial antagonist.
This interferon alpha variant leads to less STAT activation than other forms of interferon alpha, which results in only the antiviral genes getting activated. What's the mechanism whereby less STAT activation induces transcription of only the antiviral genes?
We looked at the induction of a very large number of genes in parallel, and we wanted to really identify the difference between these kind of genes in the response elements, in the promoter regions. And what we found out, that what we called before the robust genes, the antiviral genes, they are activated by the interferon response elements, and these are activated through the normal start pathway. And indeed, when we look at the gene promoters, we find clearly that they have on the promoters the right sequences for activation by the start mechanism. While what we call the tunable genes that require much higher interferon concentration don't have these elements. So they are not activated directly through the start response. We still need the start response, so there's no doubt about it. We have a second line of evidence here that is very interesting. those genes that are antiviral genes are induced relatively rapid. So we see the induction coming up within a few hours. On the other hand, when we look at the tunable genes that are more responsible for the antiproliferative response and immunomodulatory responses that do not come up, they require a longer time. So you will see the genes only coming up at later times. So we have actually two lines of evidence that really show the direct connection between the way the signaling is initiated from the receptor to the way that it is read on DNA.
Is the antiviral response induced by interferon alpha signaling the same in all cell types?
Yes. So again, because this is really the most robust function of interferon. So in all the cell types, and we tested 5 different cell lines, and we tested 3 different viruses, and in all cases we see a good antiviral response. We also see that the antiviral genes are upregulated to a similar extent in all of them, and they're also upregulated whether we use a lot of interferon or whether we use our partial antagonist. This is very different for the antiproliferative genes or the genes that relate to immunomodulation. There we indeed find that they are very cell type specific. So in different cells and with different interferons, and definitely with our very weak binding interferon, we see that they may or may not be activated. That's why we also call them tunable, because their response is really very much tuned to the specific conditions that one is dialing in.
One would think that therapeutically it might be very useful to be able to separate the antiviral effects from the antiproliferative effects of interferons. How might these findings impact the use of interferon-based antiviral therapies that are currently being used clinically?
I completely agree with you, because one, using of interferon is of course very important and has a lot of uses now as an antiviral drug and also as a drug for other diseases, for example, multiple sclerosis, where interferon beta is a major drug to combat it. One of the main problems of interferon therapy are the side effects, headache, fever, and others. So they are related more to the immune function and to inflammation. Now, when you add our interferon, our reduced affinity interferon, you will get only the direct antiviral activity. Moreover, what we think, we show it also in the paper, is a combination of the partial antagonist together with normal interferon, either type 1 interferon, so alpha interferon, or together with the lambda interferon, will produce actually quite a strong antiviral signal, but the antiproliferative and immunomodulatory signal will still be completely blocked. In other words, we will have much less side effects than you get if you would have the complete signal of the interferon. So, but here, you actually can, with relative not too large concentrations, you can block most of the signal, but still leave enough signal so that the patient still would have this antiviral response intact, at least partially.
Knock it down enough to reduce inflammation, but not enough to keep the patient from being able to respond to the flu.
Exactly. So any drug is also a toxin, you know. So it's a matter of how much you give. If you will give too much, then you will push the limit of how much antiviral response you can give, but you still get some. So we don't shut it off completely.
Dr. Schreiber, thanks for speaking with me.
It's my pleasure.
That was Gideon Schreiber discussing a paper published in the May 27th issue of Science Signaling by Levin and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any questions or comments, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.